Well, we're going to be looking at that verse in the Bible that we read at the very beginning. It's in John's Gospel, which is in the New Testament, the fourth book from the beginning of the New Testament. John chapter 6, which you'll find on page 1070, if you have one of the Bibles that you were given on your way in. Now, the overall theme of Illuminate is that Christ casts light. He casts light on us, and on the world, and on the truth about God, and on himself. And it's that last which will be the subject for our mornings in the next five Sundays. In John's Gospel, we find several occasions where Jesus uses the phrase, I am, and then some vivid metaphor that casts light on who Jesus actually is and what Jesus does for us. I am the light of the world, we'll look at next week. I am the good shepherd. But very fittingly for our harvest service today, the first I am that Jesus says, the one we kick off with, is what we find in John chapter 6, verse 35. Let me just remind you of that verse towards the bottom of that page, 1070. It says, then Jesus declared, I am the bread of life. He who comes to me will never go hungry, and he who believes in me will never be thirsty. Now, what did he mean by that? Well, I think we can draw two things from it. We have a spiritual hunger. As well as our material needs, we also have a spiritual hunger too. And secondly, he is the spiritual food that meets the hunger. So those are two very simple points we're going to see this morning. We all have a spiritual hunger as well as a material one. Now, here is somebody who knows a little bit about hunger at the moment. See that plastic box there, suspended in the sky, near to Tower Bridge in London? Anybody know the name of the gentleman who is currently living there? David Blaine, that's right. Let's see the view from his box. There he is. This is only on day two. He looks pretty fed up already, doesn't he? And there are the crowds of people who have come to see him. And there he is showing off the effects of his starvation upon his body, although he still looks a bit plumper than me, as far as I can tell. So there is David Blaine, hanging in his Perspex blocks over the streets of London. I bet he could do a chicken supper by now, couldn't he? He's now well over halfway through his self-imposed 44-day period of public starvation. Why 44, I don't know. But he's on nothing but water, hanging there in that box. He's already looking a bit scrawny, and they reckon he'll start going bonkers pretty soon as well. Or should I say even more bonkers? Because this chap has already been buried in the ground. He's balanced on a small pedestal for days on end in Times Square. He's been frozen into a block of ice, and all kinds of crazy things. Now, what do you think about him? At one level, you can't help but be impressed. He is attempting a great feat, isn't he, after all? Many of us feel like martyrs, even if we just skip lunch. Yet he's also a bit hard to respect, too, isn't he? I mean, it's not like he's doing it for really noble reasons. He's sacrificing himself to feed his starving children, or on hunger strike for some great cause, or suffering for research into deadly diseases, or something like that. No, he's doing it for publicity, really. To get on the telly, or in the newspapers, or in my sermons. Well, there's publicity for you. He doesn't have to do it publicly, does he? If there's another reason, he could do it in private, in his bedroom. But he is suffering, though. He's deprived of something that we all know we need. And not just one thing, not just food. He's deprived of company, of freedom of movement, of dignity and privacy, of stimulation, even of shelter from the sun. All things that we know we need to live and be happy in the long run. Without them, we suffer, even if it is our own silly fault that we haven't got them. So at a harvest service like this, one of the things we do is deliberately remember a fact that we so casually ignore most of the time. We have been given a world that for the vast majority of the time meets our immediate needs wonderfully well. Far more than we really need at all. And we tend to just take for granted that we'll have those needs met. Maybe it's only exceptionally when for some reason we're deprived of something. When we go and visit folk and realise that they've eaten nothing but cabbage for months. Then we realise how carefully God provides for most of us, most of the time. But my point this morning is that you don't have to shut yourself in a Perspex box to be hungry. You could be gorging yourself on Marks and Spencer's delicatessen best, day and night, and still be starving. In fact, in the way that Jesus meant it, the vast majority of people in this country are hungrier than David Blaine, and skinnier than David Blaine, and maybe even crazier than David Blaine, if you can imagine it. Most people have plenty to meet their material needs, far more than is actually required, and happily accept all the good things that God gives to meet the needs of our bodies. But so many of us ignore the most important needs of our soul, of our spirit. And that need is the need for God himself, the hunger for God. If we're deprived of him, then we will die in the end as surely as if we never eat. Now I wonder if that's a need that you recognise in yourself. A hunger or a thirst that you feel. The funny thing is that although we all have a need, a hunger, and we feel it, very often we don't recognise what that need actually is. This is perhaps one way in which our modern society is much less clever than many ancient societies. Centuries ago, you would have found thousands of people all over Europe and Asia doing the kind of thing that David Blaine is doing now. Monks, fasting, and exposing themselves to the elements and shutting themselves away and living on the top of poles and this sort of thing. They weren't doing it for publicity, although they did get a fair bit. They were doing it because they thought that way they could meet God. They were hungry for him. Now they were wrong. That's not the way to meet God. Of course not. But they were right in this. They understood that our spiritual need to know God is actually, in the long run, more important, more fundamental than all of our other needs. That it's worth making sacrifices for. They would rather go without in this world for the sake of the next. Modern life, with all its riches and comforts and luxuries, tends to be dreadfully superficial, doesn't it? It sucks us into this daily round of consumption, of eating the next meal, of buying the next thing, of thinking about only this day and this life, and not giving thought to the deeper things. So nowadays, the fundamental hunger is still just as strong, but we don't recognise it. We try to meet it in the wrong ways. For several years, Suzanne, my wife, was feeling a very strong need to have children. At least I have to say, this is my theory that explains her behaviour. You'll have to ask her what she thinks. But she has given me permission to share this theory. I think she was having quite a strong, natural, maternal urge. It happens, even to the most resilient tomboy. But she was quite resistant to the idea for various reasons. So instead, she transferred that need she felt onto the cats. They were cosseted. They were cuddled. They were petted. They were snuggled. They were felt delicacies, fed delicacies. They slept on her at night. They got a darn sight more attention than I did, I can tell you. She even called them her babies and rang them up when we were away on holiday. But, in the end, the order of nature reasserted itself. And I remember this look of horror and dismay and consternation on the faces of the cats as they stood on the stairs, and we brought a real baby home to the house. And I could tell at that moment they had seen the writing on the wall. Their privileged existence had come to an end. What's more, I suddenly realised that they knew all along what they were up to. Cats are cunning creatures, aren't they? Psychological manipulation is well within their capacities. She transferred one need onto another that couldn't really fulfil it, however wonderful your cat. Well, we all have this deep need for God. That's what the Bible says anyway. To know him personally, to relate to him, to receive from him not just the gifts that he gives, but also his personal affection and love. That need is written deep into human nature. It goes right back to our origins. Human beings designed in the first place to relate intimately with God. That's our purpose for existence. But what we call our sin, our desire to run life our own way, to do without God, write him out of our plans and do our own thing, that results in us being cut off and excluded from him. So we all have now this God-shaped hole inside us. We feel a hunger and need to fill it. Maybe you recognize that. But perhaps because we're so far from God in our everyday experience, we don't even recognize the shape. We don't even know what it is that would fill that hole. So we try all kinds of other things to do it. Or maybe it's that a godless culture around us, or even lies that our own hearts tell us, persuading us that although we feel this need, it's not really God that we need. Letting God into that space in our lives would mean letting him be in charge of your life. And you don't want that, do you? So you persuade yourself, you listen to the lies and say, no, it's not God I want, it's something else I really need. Or I can get by on something else. The result of all this is that there are a lot of starving, hungry people around. In fact, that's our basic state. It affects everyone. You can tell it by behaviour. Don't you see how so many people are basically striving and struggling just to feel good about themselves? They might have everything that they need in material terms, but they still need to feel good about themselves. Maybe it shows in the way they work. Maybe they're overambitious, workaholics. Maybe they can't settle and skip from job to job, dissatisfied with their lot all the time. Or maybe it manifests itself by people settling passively for an empty life that never stretches them or never really achieves anything, but is psychologically safe. Or maybe this hunger shows in the way they have fun. Shows itself in buying every latest gadget that you don't need, or drinking and doping and partying yourself into oblivion, or getting really passionate and consumed about some really inconsequential escapist pastime. Maybe it shows in the way people conduct their relationships, unable to commit to one in case someone better comes along, playing the field, lurching from one failure to another, always wanting something different from what they've already got. Isn't it ironic? For centuries, the human race has struggled and laboured to get the bare necessities of life. And now, broadly speaking, when most of us have those necessities without back-breaking toil at least to get them, we then impose a whole new round of labour and toil upon ourselves, struggling to feel all right about ourselves. Struggling for that one extra thing which somehow we've persuaded ourselves is all we need. If only I had that, just one more thing, then I'd be happy. And the fact is, the human race steps off one treadmill and onto another and onto another. Now I wonder if you see yourself in this description at all. Do you find in yourself a sense of need which you know is really important And yet you also know that none of the other solutions to needs that you have tried or others suggest will really meet it. Could it be then that you are hungry and thirsty for God? Does that explain what you feel inside? Think about it. Because if you are starving in that way, the good news is that there is spiritual food. Remember these verses that we've read at the very beginning. I'll read them to you again. I start this reading from midway through verse 32. "It is my Father who gives you the true bread from heaven," said Jesus. "For the bread of God is he who comes down from heaven and gives life to the world." "Sir," they said, "from now on, give us this bread." Then Jesus declared, "I am the bread of life. He who comes to me will never go hungry, and he who believes in me will never be thirsty." Jesus said that he is this bread of life, that he is what God the Father has provided to meet that aching spiritual need that we have inside us. It shouldn't surprise us that God has been so kind to do that. After all, God has provided something to meet all our other needs, hasn't he? Food for our hunger, water for our thirst, and so on. In fact, you could almost say the very fact you feel the need for something proves that that something is out there. Something exists to meet that need. What's more, God provides for our needs so much of the time in spite of our attitudes to him. How often have you sat down before or after a meal and said a really grateful, heartfelt thank you? And if you do that regularly, what about when you buy a new pair of trousers? You say grace for those? Why not? What about when you get a new book from the library? Or you have a wonderful walk through the woods on a sunny day? Or you listen to a concert? Or you enjoy in any other way one of the good things that God has given? We take these things for granted, and yet God patiently keeps them coming, even though we think so little of him. Or look at the bigger picture. Look at how we abuse and spoil the wonderful earth that God has given us, treat it with contempt, strip its resources, and put so little back. Yet God keeps on supplying our need through it, in spite of the careless way we treat it. In spite of the opinions of experts who've predicted disaster for years, the earth continues to supply what we need. That's what God is like. He keeps on being kind to us, to you and me, in spite of the fact that we are so often careless of him. But the warning is, he doesn't do it forever. There is a limit to his patience. Well, Jesus is the ultimate provision for our ultimate need. All the more wonderful because we don't deserve him in the slightest. The very nature of our need at its very heart is that we've rejected God and his kindness. Not just we've missed out, but we've said no. Go away. Leave us alone, God. This life is mine, not yours. And we've done that so deeply that when Jesus did come to this world, people did away with him on a cross. And we would have all done the same had we been there. God knew that we would do that to him, and he sent him anyway, because he loves us and he knows we need him. In fact, he knows we need that sacrifice of Jesus on our behalf to set us free from our selfishness. But why do it this way, you ask? Why specifically did God send Jesus, his son? Well, you could think of it like this. God meets our needs in the way that we can actually absorb and take in. David Blaine needs food right now, doesn't he? That's what his body is crying out for and craving. Supposing you felt sorry for poor David. So late at night, you go up to McDonald's, and then you climb up to his box and let yourself in. David, Dave, wake up, mate. You must be hungry. Look, I've got you a couple of Big Macs, extra fries. Mmm, just smell it, David. Isn't it delicious? Wrap your chops round that, mate, you say. I'll make sure nobody sees. I'll cover you back. Well, even if he wanted to, he couldn't eat it. If he did, it would make him very ill. It would all come back again, and not just because it was a McDonald's. But after 20 odd days of starvation, his stomach just couldn't take that quantity of food all on top of him. He's going to need a special, carefully planned reintroduction to the whole concept of eating, isn't he? In a way that his body can handle. Well, think of that as an analogy, if you like. God, because you can't possibly cope with God face to face. So he's come to us in a way that we can cope with. He's come to us in the person of Jesus Christ in a way that we can take in to his life. So God sends Jesus as a way of us taking in his goodness and relating to him in a way that we could cope. We couldn't possibly meet God face to face. He is so far out of our league. He's so beyond us. He's so completely and wonderfully holy. So he sends his Son to become one of us, to live a life like ours, and to die on our behalf. Through knowing Jesus, we therefore also know God himself and have a relationship with God in our hearts. That's why it's a mistake to understand these verses, as some do, as talking about fundamentally communion that Christians take. You may have heard it called Mass in some churches. But Jesus didn't say people who take the communion bread and drink the communion wine would never be hungry or thirsty for God. He's talking about faith. It's faith and a relationship with him that will keep us going, that will enable us to live not just now and forever. By having a relationship with him, that God-shaped hole that you and I have in our lives can be filled. And it will keep on being filled too. Jesus said, "He who comes to me will never be hungry, and he who believes in me will never be thirsty." Does that mean that all you have to do then is just have one shot at Jesus and then you're sorted for the rest of your life? A bit like having an immunization against polio or something like that. One shot and you're done. Of course not. That's not what he meant. What he means is that if you put your faith and your trust in God through Jesus Christ, he will always be there with you and for you, sustaining you and keeping you, and enabling you to live whatever comes along your way. The fact of the matter is that the more you know about God, the more you feel the need for God. The more you want to know about God, the more you want to know more about God. But he is always there for you, whatever circumstances come along. You know how if you have a really good friendship, or a marriage relationship, or a family relationship, it can be like meat and drink to you, can't it? It keeps you, it sustains you through tough times. It gives you energy and purpose and focus. It keeps you level when you're high. It gives you a lift when you're low. Well, how much more if it's God himself that you have that relationship with, through Jesus Christ, by the Spirit working in your life? "I am the bread of life," said Jesus. Now, some of us here really feel quite hungry. And that may well be because you are a Christian, but for whatever reason, you have let your personal relationship with Jesus Christ slip. He's been there for you, but you have not, for whatever reason, maintained your soul in your relationship with him. That might be for very simple means. You've missed church. You've just not bothered to keep any kind of personal spiritual life going. It's very easy to do that. It might have been because you suffered some experience that sort of knocked you and unseated you spiritually, and you've not really ever managed to get back on track. Well, whatever the reason, you know if I'm talking to you. If you're in that situation, you know that you're hungry. And you know it's time to get your diet sorted out. Get Jesus back in your life in a serious way. But for others of us, our feelings of hunger might be because we have never come to personal faith in him at all. Well, he is your spiritual need. You have a spiritual need, and he is the spiritual food that supplies it. Which makes it all the more silly if you've been told that, then you then go on starving yourself for no particular reason. Do you feel a need for God in your life? Do you admit it? Are you worried what others will think if you do? One of the more interesting things about David Blaine is that there are crowds of people who've turned up to look at him. Now that is a bit strange if you think about it, because nothing could be more boring than watching a man in a box getting thin very slowly. You might as well get a bit of paint drying as well while you're there. At least that's a bit quicker. Some people, mainly from other countries, admire him for what he's doing. Others, mainly people from this country, turn up to take the mickey, throw eggs, and try and get their picture in the papers. Well, maybe there are people around you who think it is cool and stylish to have nothing to do with church, with belief in God, think it's fashionable to let yourself starve spiritually. But let me be frank. In actual fact, it is stupid to do so, and utterly tragic when Jesus is there to meet that need. The point of this month that we're organising, the point of what we're always seeking to do in church is to cast some light on Jesus Christ and enable other people to see just why we're so enthusiastic about him. We know full well that other people will not necessarily see things the way we do. But I want to ask you this morning, if you have never actually put your faith in him, to think about it seriously. To at least come to a clear conclusion about who you think Jesus Christ is. To be confident in your own heart that you know the answer to the need that you feel. And don't tell me you don't feel a need of some kind. If we can help you to do that in any way, we would love to. We promise not to put any pressure on people or make any assumptions about them. But we're here to try and answer your questions, to tell you what we think the Bible has to say to us. I'd love the chance to chat to you some more about these things. I'll be hanging around after the service, and call on me if you can, if there's not too big a queue. If you're really serious in finding out, I will give you one of these packs that has a number of different items in it that will help you to find out more. If you can't get to me, there's people around and about wearing yellow badges. Give us a wave if you've got a yellow badge on. There's people all around and about of different types of people. And they want to talk to one of them. They can answer questions or tell you where to find out more. And again, they can give you one of these. You'll find them in my pigeonhole, folks, if you haven't got one. On the way out, too, there's all kinds of books you can read. There's books that will really stretch your brain. There's books that will tell it as simply and straightforwardly as you can. The ones on the right on the way out are free. Fantastic. The ones on the left you'd need to buy. If you prefer to listen, there's tapes and CDs that explain these things. If you prefer to watch, there's videos you can take away. You really can't complain that there isn't something for you waiting downstairs. I really love everybody to take at least something with them on the way out. And remember, if you want to register a question or a comment, there are the yellow sheets to do so at the table on the way out. If there's been anything at all this morning that's been interesting to you, or anything you want to follow up on, even if you're actually very sceptical but just want to be 100% totally sure that you're a sceptic, well, there's stacks more coming up here at Surrey Chapel in this month. Please come back to a later event and see what we have to say then.